We're taking a break from fresh episodes for a bit, but instead of leaving you hanging, I'll be republishing the episodes that I think deserve a second listen. I know, we love us some fresh content, but smart ideas are worth hearing twice, because sometimes hearing something again is exactly what will move us from passive listener to actually adding the strategy to our toolkit. So put those earbuds in, pull that pen out, let's make this re-listen actionable.
After that, my CEO had like come by my desk and like he pulled me into the room and was like, can we do more of this? I can't believe 4 weeks ago it was this. And he held up the New York paper.
Welcome to Email Swipes, where we peek behind the scenes at the emails that catch your attention and earn their place in your swipe file. Every other week, we'll talk to an email expert about an experiment they ran. And in the following episode, we'll dive into the strategies and methods used in the email so you can inform and inspire your own email work. I'm Mickey Elbaz, the copywriter behind winning emails for 8- and 9-figure SaaS and e-commerce brands like Shopify, Four Sigmatic, and Sprout Social. And I know that hearing the background stories to these emails will help you turn pie-in-the-sky insights into plug-and-play actions. Ready to make inspiration tactical? Let's go. First, let's read today's email. Please, get them anything but us. We appreciate the love, but Rev isn't for everybody. This holiday season, there are going to be a lot of companies emailing you to try to sell you on the idea that their product makes for an ideal gift. Just today, a cure for boldness that we refuse to name, cold emailed us with the subject line, "We wish you a Hairy Christmas." Enough is enough. We're not here to do that. We're a transcript / caption company, people. We're just not a great gift. As you probably know, your kids will not be waiting up all night for Santa to leave them a perfectly accurate SRT file. Your in-laws, get them a day at a hot mud spa. Or an inflatable kayak, maybe some sort of themed popcorn. They just won't appreciate our time-stamped transcript editor or the fact that we offer a rush option. Even though we know you love Rev, please understand that we really aren't a holiday gift type company. We're absolutely amazing at captions and transcripts, true. We provide value somewhere in the 15 times to 20 time range, but the people want other stuff. They just do. As for you, well, of course we got you a few little somethings. Happy holidays, your friends at Rev.
Yeah, let's do it. Be here.
So let's talk about the email, where it came from.
Sure. The story is, and I guess you have to know a little bit about Rev.
Actually, wait, I forgot to ask about you.
Yeah, that's fine. We can talk about me. I'll talk about me all day. Yeah, so 30-second pitch to me. Writer background, I have an MFA at the University of Michigan in fiction writing. I went and I taught creative writing and argumentative writing at some state schools in the morning. And then I also ran a newspaper at night for a couple years. And then I moved into the media industry in Austin because I was sick of working so much. And I was the head writer for thechive.com for a few years. And then I moved into the SaaS world. This is my first non-media job, was with rev.com. And ever since then, the sort of success of the email program has sort of set me off on to email and brand and that kind of life, which I really like and prefer to the media world. So this actually was the coming out party of my sort of ethos as a marketer. So that's why it holds a very special place in my heart, because it's sort of the inflection point of my career where I was like, I'm just going to do this thing that I think will work, and it worked. And then I kind of use that for the rest of it. And since then, so like the last 6 years. So it's weird to kind of see this again with that frame around it. The story, to take one step back, because it's important to know what Rev was and then why this about. Like, so Rev at the time, it's sort of shifted a little bit, but they still do this, but speech to text. And people go with their audio files or video files, upload it, it goes to a backend where there's basically like an Uber situation where transcriptionists, like human transcriptionists, go in, they claim the file, and then they listen and they type it out, right? And AI takes a first pass at that. So this was where AI sort of got the thrust it has lately. But, you know, what had happened was they made this decision on a Friday to sort of say, look, we're going to change the parameters of how we pay you. The easier stuff is going to pay less, the more difficult stuff is going to pay more. Now, they didn't have a traditional communication person write this thing that they told people, and it spun out of control wildly. They're like, you're not going to pay us as much. And then it went to the press. So, and I've shown you these clippings. The New York Times wrote this thing, like, how a gig worker revolt begins. And then like all this precipitous, like terrible press. We got in, it was on a Tuesday because it was Veterans Day weekend. And we're like, what happened? Because no one was paying attention. And then we got back in and we're like, oh no, this is terrible. Like there was like a fire drill, had our PR person, all the marketing team got together and we're like, this is what's happening. We're really taking it on the chin. People were calling over and over again, like trying to talk to our CEO and like get him to legitimize his decision. And we're like, no, it's more complicated than that. But the cat was out of the bag, right? And I was like, well, you know, we've been doing a lot of safe stuff and it looks like our brand is really taking on the chin. I would like the chance to sort of make us look a little bit more fun and human and all this other stuff, right? So they're like, yeah, you know, I guess we can try a test. So we wrote a very standard December email, like, you know, here's the stuff we've been doing. And then I wrote this, right? That was my first foray into Photoshop with that little Rev logo on the box. At the time, Rev logo looked like that. So it was like that red Rev. And I was like, this looks perfect. We'll just slap a logo on it. We did. That was sort of where I was like, this is going to be really fun. So basically, I wrote this blog post sort of touting all of Rev's new things. Like we had an app and all this other stuff. And I was basically pitching it, you know, you don't want to give this to your 8-year-old nephew. And then I was like, I'm going to write this email. So we wrote this email sort of tongue in cheek about how like every company in the world sort of writes their Christmas holiday season email, even if it doesn't matter. And it's like, it's sort of because we had marketers, right? Like most of the people were marketers, sales in that universe, right? So they were cognizant of it, right? So whenever we went meta and we started being self-referential, we were already sort of tapping into the world, the lexicon that they operate in, right? So it was sort of like a little touch of the nose to everybody there saying like, look, you know, everybody does it, even like this baldness cure, right? We wish you a Merry Christmas, right? So it's like very cute and, you know, affable and approachable, right? And self-flagellating, right? Like basically saying like, we're going to do that, but also we know that it's silly to do it, right? And it landed really well, right? Like there was some point where I said, hey, there's no Rev gift card. I don't know if it's in the email itself or in the blog post that it links to, but basically I monitored we had MailChimp at the time and I was monitoring the reply email and people were like writing back, I would love a Rev gift card. And like, they're like, this was really funny. And stuff like that. Somebody actually took a photo of like they had printed out the little girl, the image at the top, and like put it on a board at their office. And I was like, this really took off. And like it seemed to have built this lovely brand equity, right? People started liking us again after we had just been completely like snowed under with all this hate. And it was curious. I mean, I guess the public changes their perception pretty quickly. So I was like, this really works. Of course, the good news was that the test that we sent was like to a very small limited amount. It blew it out of the water, right? Like 10% to 10%. And the other one didn't get it. And I was like, well, let's just send it's to all of them now. So we sent to the whole list. I think it was like 800,000 people and it was on social, like it did really well. And I was like, well, I didn't expect it to go off so well. So I get to go back to my boss and was like, look, you know, I've been really wanting to write like this whole time. And now here's the data, right? Like the reply rates through the roof, you know, we're getting positive mentions on social. We had like a listening tool that was about like our social, like positive, negative mentions, like spike through the roof on positive mentions and stuff like that. So it was like, I had all this data to go to him and say, look, I'm going to follow this up by faking like there's a Rev gift card. And then that's where we kind of went into the next step, which was the next email.
Introducing the Rev gift card. But no, not really. We said Rev makes for a terrible gift. And what do you all do? You email in droves to ask for Rev branded gift cards. So to recap, us. We aren't good holiday gifts. So many people. Well, now we all want your gift cards. Us. Huh? Now, of course, the thing about Rev gift cards is that they don't exist. They never have. Until very recently, we had no idea there was a Tickle Me Elmo-sized demand for us during the holidays. So to save Christmas, we did it. We made official Rev gift cards. Yay! Okay, but not really. We did ask the engineering team, but it turns their reason was some programming code mumbo-jumbo that frankly bored us into not listening very well. Something with the flux capacitor? Now, you may still want to give your unsuspecting loved ones the gift of perfectly accurate transcripts or captions, and there isn't a way to do that. Clearly, you're in a candy cane-flavored pickle. We can help. How to give the gift of Rev in lieu of an official Rev gift card. Step 1. Take cash out of wallet. Step 2, write for Rev use only on Post-it. Step 3, apply the Post-it to the aforementioned cash. Step 4, tell us what you love about Rev on Twitter with the tag hashtag RevHolidayMugshot. Step 5, get a gift. Wait, what? That's right. For the first 40-ish folks to use the tag, we'll send you a Rev hot chocolate mug for free. You're not the only ones around here who can surprise somebody. With love, confusion, and a sleigh load full of cheer, your everyday email elves at Rev.
This one actually was the one that I really felt like kind of proves that you shouldn't always outline every single email that you want to send, because sometimes there's an opportunity in doing something a little off the cuff, right? So this was literally like a couple days later where I was like, okay, so we have like 70% open rate. We have all this great engagement data. So let's send them something that like just reminds them, seeing that like little link at the top, what we had previously sent to them, because I was worried about the other 30%. So it's a recap of all the other stuff that I wrote in the other email. And then basically like being playful back with them, like, oh, you guys were being contrarian. And so, you know, we don't have a gift card. We don't have the resources that Santa does. So in lieu of that, here's what you should do. It's like, take some cash out of your wallet, put for rev use only on it, and take a picture of it and put it on Twitter or Instagram. And we ended up changing the gift to rev hashtag to something funnier. So it was rev holiday mugshot. We went into the supply closet. I was like, what can we give people? And my social girl, she was like, we have mugs. I was like, let's call them hot chocolate mugs. And we counted. We had like, we're like, okay, we have 40. That's what we did. And she agreed to kind of monitor social. And then it blew up. I think like 400 or 500 people did it. It was like credit cards. Like we saw some British, like some euros, and it was wild. After that, my CEO had like come by my desk and like he pulled me into the room and was like, can we do more of this? I can't believe 4 weeks ago it was this. And he held up the New York paper, right? The New York Times. And now it's this. And I was like, yeah, I think we can leverage this a little bit more and be meta and be more of like a community focused brand. So that's the story as far as from soup to nuts there.
It's such a great story because it really goes from bad press to blowing up on social. That's incredible. And I think it's a little bit to your CEO's credit that he didn't just say like, okay, we got to go safer. You know, we took some risks and it didn't work out and we just got to go safe. And he said, no, okay, I'll give you your chance. And your chance worked, which is amazing when that happens.
Yeah, it was cool.
And the rest of the team too, like you mentioned that, you know, in the Slack group, everyone was feeling so much happier about their jobs and the company morale and all that. So kudos.
Thank you.
There's so much I want to dig into here. Even, you know, just like the little fun lines, like, you know, the Santa level resources, like they're just so fun. And I think it part of it is what you mentioned in terms of the meta, in terms of asking, like, you know, in terms of the team, you know, very much working with that corporate culture that's not so corporate, but kind of like that marketing corporate culture and really, really digging into that and knowing your audience, which is interesting because you came from a media background and this was your first marketing role. How did you get that depth of relevance and understanding of your audience?
I think that one thing that I've read a lot of before this was how important it was to reapply media principles elsewhere. And that companies weren't doing a really good job of it back then, especially. But like saying like B2C principles really work in B2B world, right? This notion that we have this different self at work and that is separate and distinct, that uses only the logical parts of your brain, doesn't care about everything else, right? Like that's a misunderstanding of the way that humans operate and make decisions, right? That's where I came from. I was like, well, everyone is saying now, like, let's do this thing where we're going to be like a media company. But what they're really meaning is let's use these principles that tap into their emotional centers, right? That, you know, make you like the people you're doing business with. And that's what media companies had to do, especially back then, because there was so much of it, right? The media bubble was growing. And the only way you can separate yourself from the competition was building a community, right? And like having that relationship with your audience. You know, for all its faults and some of the things that just didn't age so well, the Chive did do community building really well. They built their brand on building a community of Chivers and things like that. I was like, well, we can reapply that here. Like, we can be human. And one of the things that's really in our pocket is that people aren't expecting this from a transcription company, right? Like, they're like, transcription's boring. I was like, well, yeah, it is. And we can have fun with that. That's sort of what the first email is about, right? Like saying, look, we know we're boring. And that's fun already, right? You're like, what is this not fun company suddenly being fun about? And then you're ready to keep going a little bit and sort of using that thrust, right? So it was almost easier to reapply these media principles on something that was perceived as boring than it would be to media state where you're expected to be entertaining at all times. That expectation from the audience is sort of like, well, you're supposed to be this flashy brand and you're being flashy, big deal, right? Moving on with my life, right? So this is the thing where it really was highlighted by the expectation of boring.
That's such a good point, because I just recently saw a campaign from a company that is not perceived as boring, and they've built this brand of being very funny. They did a recent campaign that everybody was thinking was so funny, and I'm like kind of analyzing and thinking it's not that funny. It's almost they built this brand, so now people are looking to expect that. So you just kind of have that like immediate reaction, but it doesn't have that same, this kind of reaction, like a from the gut fun, like, oh, I love this.
I think you raise a really good point in that also corporate funny is almost always not funny. It's just usually old memes being recycled. I think Reddit has its like hello or fellow kids sort of super popular subreddit that they make fun of corporations that try to like ingratiate themselves by using these tips and tools. So like you have to be a little risky, right? Like I encourage anybody listening to this benign violation theory, which is like sort of why things are funny. And it's like, it's a negotiation between a violation of your expectations and it being super benign. And this is sort of the perfect storm here where it's like, yeah, expectations are a transcription company should be dry and boring, where, you know, to violate that doesn't take very much. So when I'm talking about calling ourselves the elves at Rev and stuff like that, that's just a little bit, it's such an easy layup to do. I had a super great product marketer, to go back to your question, how I knew, she's like, here's the people who are using Rev and here's our problem. So she had all stuff that was helping me with constraint of creation too. So she's like, marketers, right? Content creators, these types of people are using it. Here's their pain points. Here's their like psychographic and biographic and all this data, right? So, right. So when I make like little references, I'm like, okay, I know that our average audience is 25 to 35. They're a little bit in the early adopter crowd. They don't take themselves too seriously, but they are also pretty well ingrained in the marketing world. We knew all this stuff about them before we went into this, and that kind of helped. And I often say like a really good PMM will make you more creative because they create these constraints.
Yeah, 100%. Constraints and also that depth of understanding your customers that you can really tap into that and lean into that and make it super relevant. Yeah, those are the two. That's the PMM's job.
She's fantastic. We worked on a couple other things. We worked on a choose your own adventure thing. We went with Typeform where you get to pick your persona at the very beginning. So she's like, we have four personas now because we added new products and stuff like that. I was like, well, let's just make it so you can pick your literal own persona and then live a life that you where you need rev. And it was really fun. That was all really her, again, coming up with the constraints and then me saying, oh, how do we talk to all four of them at once, right? Maybe we can't. Maybe we build a game where you have to self-identify as the thing you are. You know, we know that you don't know our first name. This is a merge tag, right? You know, we know, right? So a lot of the meta sort of, that's I think really what did it was like this subtle undercurrent of we kind of knew we were being self-aware speaking in this way and things like that. And I think that's what a lot of marketers appreciated.
And again, playing to this whole idea that marketers know the rules and know about personas and know that you're doing it. And instead of it just kind of being this like behind the scenes, like almost like sometimes it turns creepy even where it's like, okay, you're trying too hard or you're creeping me out or anything like that. It's like, okay, you know, we're doing this. So let's have fun with it together. Okay. So what do you think contributed to this email success aside from all the things we actually just covered, but any other things? You've heard me talk about my email playbooks about a million times already, but did you know that I offer a free re-engagement playbook? That's right. Go to nikkielbaz.com/email-playbooks and check out the sample. I think you'll love it.
I honestly think that having social on board too with it, because she was really excited. Rachel, her name was, she's still there, I think, and she's doing a great job. I pay attention to the stuff that they come up with. So, you know, having her on board and saying, you know, I need somebody to actually monitor just in case this thing does blow up. If she had come back and said, no, I can't do that. I got too much to do. We wouldn't have run this, honestly. Can't do that. Like, I have other things to do. So getting that alignment. And again, like, it was one of those things where the whole marketing team was seeing the response. We had like a Slack integration where when people wrote back, they were seeing it light up. Like, this is awesome. It was only a small team at the time. It was like six people, but they were seeing it. They were getting excited too. Like, hey, you know, we kind of got out of the doldrums of getting pummeled and feeling a little bit better about the company we were working for saying, okay, as we thought. I think those, like the optics were a lot better. So she signed on for that too. And she has some great ideas in terms of the mechanisms and all that kind of stuff. Cause I was like, you know, how do we get people to do this and how do we reward the behavior? And, you know, she's like, well, I stuff in the swag storage closet. And I was like, that's perfect. So without her buying in again, we probably would have never ran it. And also my VP of marketing at the time was like, pull the trigger. Like, I was like, you sure we want to test this? He's like, no, but the first one was good enough. Clearly we're onto something here. So let's just do it. Having that buy-in and having that test initially to point back to was really important.
Cool. That's so fun when you have a test that just so clearly shows you, okay, yeah, this is the winner. Just keep doing what you're doing. That's amazing. That's awesome.
And I think I can say now, like I definitely wrote that first one, that the A part of this A-B test was very boring, like just intensely boring.
Sneaky.
Little sneaky, but I was like, you know, most of this other stuff isn't really that great anyway. And I told you this, I got an offer for two jobs. One was like a corporate job that paid more, and they're just like, we want you to leave her. And no creative, it's just email, right? Like maybe some testing here and there, but no like real, you know, interest. And they actually got panned as a terrible email program, like by somebody randomly. And they're like, you want to do email right, you should see rev.com.
No way.
Mention that because I got a job offer the same day by these two companies.
Wow.
And one paid less. Rev paid less. So they're like, you have complete creative control. And I was like, awesome. And that was like 6 months before. And it really wasn't that way until this sort of crisis came up.
That is so funny. That's so funny. No, but even if that B test was boring, it's still the A was such a clear winner, not in comparison to the B, but just in the number of responses that you got and how it blew up, which ties back to the whole, like, it's not just about the opens, not just about the clicks, it's about the response. And especially since you were aiming to build a community, the responses were so critical to building that feeling.
Yeah, right.
If you could go back in time and perfect that email, is there anything that you would have changed about it?
I would probably tighten it up a little bit. A lot of things that people wrote back, these emails were like, I read the whole thing, right? And I'm like, does that mean it looked too long? You know, I look back and I think maybe I could have tightened it up a little bit. But no, I'm still, even though I beat myself up on a lot of things that I've sent out in the past and definitely gotten a lot wrong, I think that I'm pretty happy with this just simply because of the response.
It's nice to have things that we could just be proud of without all those inner gremlins grumbling at us.
It's so clearly like an inflection point and like a successful story after. I went off to get a bunch of clients from this kind of stuff. It's hard to look back on an inflection point where you think, wow, my life got a lot better as a result of this, and look back and think you need to change anything. And it also opened them up to think like more creatively too, because I think, like, I don't want to take credit for that, but like, they're sort of saying, oh, we can have fun at this job. Until then, everyone was sort of just like, okay, well, we're a transcription company and this is what we do. Speech to text studies and things like that. And then we had people coming in who were like, hey, we can do some wild stuff. You know, we did a lot of things that are kind of embarrassing looking back. And maybe that's a different podcast. But like, it definitely opened up the creative side of everybody. And we definitely failed hard on a few things after this, because maybe a little overconfident. But yeah, we, at the end of the day, it's still, I think that it's still data to point back to that you can use for other things and other decisions that you make. Eventually, we dialed it in. Like, we were like, oh, we took this and we went wild. And then we're like, okay, maybe we went a little bit too far. Let's bring it back. And then we kind of reassess why it worked and why the other hypotheses didn't.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a balance. It's finding that, you know, anytime you start something new, it's going to be a bit of an experiment until you get to that point where it's like, okay, no, we can't work with that. We should work with that. And it's a journey, you know, getting to that point where you're like confident that it's going to work. And sometimes even then you're still wondering, or super confident in something and then the response is terrible. Yeah, just part of the game.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. You test and you learn.
Yeah, it's like permission to experiment and try things, which always comes with risk that things will fail, but the upside of it is so worthwhile. That's email. Definitely. All right, so who are you following now? Who's your favorite brand to get emails from?
I have two, and they've since changed. And I think what happens a lot, what happens is these people get in the job and they're really good at what they do, and then they get promoted. I really, really liked Shinesty's email program for a long time. They do male clothing. They just had a really aggressively honest voice, and I thought it was refreshing, and the humor of their piece. And Baboon to the Moon, whoever did their email, I can just almost tell the moment they left their job. It used to be fun and awesome and engaging, and then they went to this sort of like straight up visual thing where they didn't add any copy. And I was like, this is boring. I can go to the website. I don't want this stuff. I can be entertained. Like, this isn't cheeky. This isn't engaging or community building or like talking to me as a human. It's just like showing me that. I don't really care, right? So those two, and I think they recently changed their people. And I should go and look on LinkedIn to find them and just be like, you know, I really was a big fan of getting your emails, and I look forward to them both. But I'm sort of disappointed, especially with Baboon to Moon. Like, my wife bought a bag from them, and she was the one who pointed out. She's like, they're running like you. And I was like, they got better than me. I wouldn't feel so energized about a bag, right? Like, it's hard. It's even harder for them because they have like a much more competitive space. There's a lot of people space that are doing that sort of irreverent thing. You know, consumer brands, there's always somebody in that in one part of the field that's doing some sort of like jester archetype type of, right? And that they stood out was really impressive to me.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I, you know, anytime I got asked this question, they were on the list. And then recently I just stopped mentioning them because, yeah, I didn't put two and two together that I just figured like, okay, for some reason I'm not opening anymore, but I didn't put two and two together that there's a reason I'm not opening them anymore. That's really a good point. So yeah, whoever was at that.
I would guess that person, yeah, they left or got promoted. That's what I would say, right? Like, I would say they left because if they're promoted, they probably were like, no, you can't do this to my baby. And that's what basically happened at Rev, where they moved me from email to brand. And then I was like, I'm still going to write the newsletter though. And they're like, no, you can handle that. I was like, great. That's my thing. Please don't mess that up. It takes a long time to hone that voice, right? I would really guess that somebody would have written back to their emails and be like, you're awesome. Can you run my marketing team?
That's super cool. Was it hard to leave Rev knowing that now that's it?
It was hard. Yeah. I mean, like, that's sort of why I went back into SaaS. Like, I went off into cybersecurity and then I did sports and sports gambling for a while. And that was fun. But I actually, now I'm back in the SaaS world because I have that itch to scratch where I'm like, I want to build this email list again. And I'm hoping to call it, we sell to RevOps people. It's a company called Rattle.com or GoRattle.com. Rattle.com is a poetry journal. We sell to RevOps people. So I'm hoping to call it RevOps After Dark, where we kind of have the more human side of what I'm seeing about that community specifically is, and it's a very, like, most communities that exist now are very stodgy, and the people in them are not stodgy. So it's like a really opportune place to sort of say, hey, look, these are human problems that are part of your job. Let's talk about them in a newsletter. So I'm really pumped about getting that off the ground. It's coming out in about a month. So, but yeah, that's really why I came back to SaaS altogether, because I was like, here's another thing that's really boring that has a lot of opportunity to do it, like to blow it up. And, you know, our LinkedIn is a good example now of like, I think I'm trying again to relive that sort of fun of taking something boring and getting people to be like, wait, this is not how a traditional RevOps company would be talking, right?
Yeah, it's funny because after you left Rev, I remember seeing that new headline on LinkedIn and then being like, ugh, cybersecurity, like so boring, come on. And then thinking, that's so silly, like transcription was boring too. Like this is exactly where he should be, you know, taking the boring and making it fun. And then you move to somewhere else. And then, you know, each one was boring. And this really has become your brand of making boring fun and interesting and engaging for people and making it human, really.
Yeah, that's what I like doing. It's a lot of fun. And the only problem with cybersecurity is that when people are hacked, they don't want fun, right? So, I mean, it did well for some of the things that we wanted it to do, but they were incident response. They're like, we need to kind of this up a little bit. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So it didn't quite mix there. Sports gambling, again, sort of one of those things where we had a lot of fun, but then when people lose their money, they're like, yeah. So I was like, yeah, I think B2B SaaS is probably my sweet spot.
A little less intense for people.
Yeah, don't mess with somebody's money or their computer security, right?
Nick, thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's one of my favorites.
I had a great time.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right.
If you really want to make this re-listen actionable, check out the takeaways episode for this email story. You'll find the link in the show notes, and we'll also republish it on Monday. I won't be sending any promos for it, though, so make sure you're following the show if you want to get that notification. Otherwise, we'll see you next week for a new old favorite.